Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first post-Oscar F This Movie.
That's exciting.
The only podcast that is three laws safe. That's some iRobot knowledge dropped on
Why?
Me. Right off the bat. Podcast? That's how I do. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined with Academy Award winner, Doug.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm joined with, I think I said. I'm joined by Academy Award winner.
I
joined
with you. in doing this podcast.
You start
the podcast right with some iRobot.
With an iRobot reference. That's right. That's where this is going.
Yikes.
That's where this whole thing has been going.
I'm wondering should I quote AI?
Three laws safe.
Should I quote Hancock? Is that something?
Quote Hancock. Ready? Here's my Hancock quote. Ready?
Yeah. Hold on.
This also works for iRobot.
Okay.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, I think have you heard my hitch?
Oh, what does it sound like?
I think it sounds a little something. All right, never mind. Thanks for having me, Patrick.
Thanks for coming, Doug.
It was such an honor and a thrill to win that Oscar.
It really was for you, I assume.
Yeah, it was great.
Is Anne Hathaway as lovely in person as she is?
Did I not mention
Oscars?
You in my acceptance speech?
You did not.
Oh shoot!
It's okay.
This is so amazing.
It's okay. So blah blah blah. F this movie. go to our website fthismovie.blogspot.com and what else? Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store or DVDverdictPresents.com or follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter.com/FThisMovie. Twitter be blowing up because let's get right into the Oscars because this past weekend was the Oscars and for the first time ever, F This Movie embraced what everyone else has been doing for years and live tweeted.
F This Movie's like, it's 2007, right? Let's live tweet some stuff. Well, actually, it's 2009. It's 2009,
it's
right?
It's 2009.
I don't want to predate myself.
Avatar.
Wait, real quick, go back to the iTunes thing.
I don't want to.
I think at an old podcast I heard you say something that now all the episodes are on iTunes?
No, they're not.
What?
They're still not. No one will get in contact with me.
Not even John Petrilla?
Not even John Petrilla. Someone please, if you know how to get all of our shows into iTunes instead of just the 10 most recent, please email us at This Movie Podcast.
Stop sending us Cars links. Just find out how to get it on iTunes.
Really, we have close to 50 shows. We'd like them all to be in the iTunes store. But if you're listening to us in iTunes and you want to hear all of our old shows, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com, where you can find shows dating back to May of 2010.
2010.
It was a simpler time.
I think so.
A time before the King's Speech was the best picture.
How do you feel about that?
I feel indifferent because
don't lie to me.
Here's the thing.
This movie.
I don't care about the Oscars. I really don't. There was a time where I took them more seriously. They're a joke. It doesn't matter who wins or who loses.
Sure.
I think if they're going to exist, they should at least try and not be sucky, but they don't. So they just say, yeah, King's Speech, best picture. And again, nothing against the King's Speech. It's a fine movie. A lot of people really like it. I just think it's such an obvious and safe choice.
Well, right. That could have been the nominee in 1945
exactly.
or 1965.
And they're just, that's all they do is sort of make safe and obvious choices.
Three fives in a row.
To the point where we freak out when they like, oh, they gave it to The Departed or No Country for Old Men. They're getting edgy, you know, like they're really getting with the times. Nope, King's Speech.
You know, what's funny too, as you said before, just now. Just now before. You said that you used to take them a little more... I don't think you ever took them seriously, but you used to take them...
Oh, no. I was obviously passionate about it at least 1 year.
For real?
Yeah. Well, I left because they gave it to Russell Crowe instead of Tom Hanks.
Was the year you were passionate about it?
Yeah.
That's crazy. You're crazy. That's nuts. But no, like, obviously in the past you took it more seriously.
Yeah.
And it's funny now because I would think, like, back for us, back in high school, back in college... This was it. Like, that was the only award show for the movies was the Oscars. I mean, there was the Emmys and the Grammys and all that stuff. But even the Golden Globes were not what they have become.
Blockbuster Awards.
And now there's a ton
Kids
of awards. There's And that was those existed, but now it's like the award season.
Right.
And it's got this stupid name called award season. But you've got Golden Globes. I watched the Independent Spirit Awards, which were a waste of time and insufferable.
Yes.
Everyone's complaining, by the way, about how cold it was. And I'm thinking, like, by the fifth time you hear that joke made, you realize that, like, in Chicago or New York or anywhere north of wherever you are, they don't care. And
America doesn't know that it's cold until Melissa Leo is also cold.
Right. And then she's like, fuck! She's it's like, about, that's what I deleted.
It's about selling movies. I forget what she said. Remember, she had her freak out at the end? And respecting
the work?
The work!
No, she's, she...
Leo out, motherfuckers!
Straight out of Compton!
She slams the mic down.
My point is that you took them more seriously in the past, and now it seems like they are the serious awards.
Well, right.
And they always have been, but now even more so in kind of comparison to the Golden Globes, it's like, well, these are the serious ones. And it's so staid and stuffy. And you've got Anne Hathaway, who was so affected, as Stern has said over and over again, but just like she's desperate and needy and so showy and has to sing and dance.
Right.
James Franco, who is checked out. And it's the Young and Hip Oscars. I mean, they say this. Right, they say, this is the Young and Hip Oscars. Like, if it is, we'll...
Check out our auto-tune sketch.
Right.
The winner for Best Picture, The King's Speech. Young and Hip.
Check out Bob Hope auto-tune, yo.
Part of the problem is that it's a complete formality at this point. Because, like you said, it's an awards season. And all of the other awards shows act to predict what the winner of the Oscar will be.
Right.
So we get to Oscar night, and it's like, well, of course these are the winners. We've known this for a month.
And they even have the odds, like, well, if 94% of the Directors Guild, whatever, winners win this or whatever.
So for a month, it's King's Speech, King's Speech, King's Speech.
Well, then it was Social Network, and then King's Speech surge, and it's like, what is this? Is this like a...
What decides
this?
That?
Is a hot dog race on a Jumbotron at a Cubs game, is what this is. You know, this is like, I hope my ticket stub, like, right. I'm in the blue section. Right. I hope the Bratwurst, actually, that Brewers, that Cubs, sorry. The Bratwurst.
Anyway, I hope everyone enjoyed our live tweets.
Yeah, we live tweet the shit out of that.
If you want to go back and read them, twitter.com/fthismovie.
You can read all of our tweets.
You will be confused by a lot of them because they were very much corresponding to what was happening on
screen.
But
if you watch the Oscars, I think that you'd be able to, like, you know, at least kind of shoehorn in there the time frame.
I don't understand who they're referring to as a total asshole. The answer, everyone. Everyone at the Oscars, total asshole.
What did Annette Bening do to warrant that kind of expletive deleted?
She got out of bed.
Exactly. She didn't change her hairstyle since, I don't know.
She has that actressy smile. But she's in The American President.
That is.
And we do love The American President.
For the longest time, that was.
Written by Academy Award winner Aaron Sorkin.
That was, for the longest time, all I knew her from. So she always was kind of like, oh, she's great. I love her. And then, like, I saw a couple things I was like, that revealed her true colors. And I'm like, oh, these are the exceptions because she's awesome. Right. And no, American President's the exception.
Yeah.
Where the president punches a dude for punching Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I remember that.
Anyway, so the Oscars were a big pile of garbage aides. And they're over now, thank God. And now we
can
focus on...
Let's focus on next year's Oscars.
Hall Pass and Drive Angry 3D.
All right, so let's back up. Doug.
Yes, Patrick.
Have you seen anything lately?
I have. I've seen I haven't done a podcast with you in quite in a coon's age.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. And it sounds vaguely racist.
Do they live
so
a long time, raccoons?
We're talking raccoons. I am not at all racist.
I don't understand.
The
longer you dwell on how not racist you are.
Is the squeak being caught on the microphone?
Definitely. Yeah.
Patrick, real quick, by the way, we're in his basement in his house, and he just got
it's the F This Movie studio.
The most badass home theater system I've ever seen with my life. How big is the screen?
47 inches, bitches.
No, come on.
I got a 47-inch plasma. What? What?
Patrick has a projection system.
Laser disc.
And four giant lounge chairs.
Who wants to watch Batman and Robin on Laserdisc?
Well, I do. Now that you bring it up.
Who wants Cat People? Sound of the Doom.
The Ice Age. he got a great home theater system, so I'm a little distracted by that. But anyway, so I saw... What did I see? I saw Hall Pass and...
Ooh.
Oh, I used my Garbage AIDS reference too soon because the Oscars were actually... really enjoyable and fun to watch compared to the piece of shit that is Hall Pass. I think I hated it more out of everyone in the theater, but I know you were not digging it at all.
No, I didn't. I was not a fan.
Really, really, like, hate is a strong word.
You were responding to some things that I took as a given because I don't know if I've just seen more Farrelly Brothers movies, but like the bad filmmaking and the distracting extras. At one point I had turned to you and said they cast all their friends and family.
And I knew that
because their commentary tracks is just like, that's our cousin. That's our neighbor's friend.
Whatever reason in other movies, they did like, Stuck on You, right? And that like, there's neighbors and friend, and Something About Mary. There's like, you can tell that there's people that aren't actors.
Right.
But it just worked better. And that's the least of my concerns. Honestly, I don't even know why we're talking. It is so like, it's a ugly movie.
Yeah.
It's very bright. It's everyone is orange. And yes, as you said, something is wrong with Jenna Fisher.
Like, I'm worried about Jenna Fisher.
Because she's going to die soon.
She's looking sickly.
She looks like she's...
By the way, she's not actually looking sickly. It's just a bad makeup artist.
I don't know. She drank some Chernobyl water or something. There's something wrong with her.
I actually felt bad for her, like going to the premiere and seeing herself projected on that giant screen. Like, yeah, oh my God, look at how I look.
And look at how bad I'm an actor I am, because
yeah, that she, part I don't think she makes that leap.
I don't know if she connects that, but she is so great in The Office.
Yeah,
and I love her, and she is Pam. There's no
right,
and now she's becoming more glamorous and dumping her husband and you know all this stuff. And now it's like you're not a movie star, you're Pam.
We're barely team James act. Gunn, by the way.
Yeah, James Gunn, come on. I hope he fucks some whores in revenge.
Yes,
to Jenna, what's her name?
Fisher.
Jenna Elfman.
Dharma and Greg.
But it was such an ugly movie, and we saw it for JB's birthday, and it was a mistake. We should have seen 8 other movies, the Indian movie playing down the hall. We should have seen that instead, because
good Romeo gracious, and Juliet.
We should have seen Romeo and Juliet on your fucking home theater
written
system.
By James Gunn, former husband of Jenna Fisher. That's why we're team JG.
That's right. Anyway, so I saw that, and it's been a while. I've seen a bunch of stuff on Blu-ray and
just
DVD.
Just rattle that shit off. We don't have to talk
Winter's
about
Bone.
It.
It's fine. It's fine. Winter's Bone is fine. What else did I see?
It's the King's Speech of Ozark Noirs, I think. That was well acted. That was fine. That was good. Let's move on.
I was kind of bored by it, which I know.
No one
really
trained
really
a dragon at any point.
I saw Taken, which is a lot of fun, but so stupid.
Can I bring up a point about Taken real
2012,
quick?
2012, which now I bought a place in the Ozarks because I want to live.
I don't know if you blew your so stupid wad before mentioning 2012, the movie that ends with like Cusack's daughter being like, I don't pee my pants anymore. Right. It's like, that's how we're ending on that note.
No more pull-ups.
Yay. By the way, everyone's dead.
No more pull-ups. Unfortunately, I still shit my pants. Because the world has ended.
Everyone is dead, but you don't piss your pants? Great. Right. Everything's going to be fine.
You will in about 60, 65 years, so don't worry about it.
This is not my observation about Taken. When I saw the trailer for Taken, I was excited about it because it had this great beat in the trailer where Liam Neeson is on the phone with Maggie Grace, his daughter, who chooses to play the role. She's in her, 30s?
I got to think she's at least 60.
She chooses to play the role as a borderline retarded 13-year-old.
Right.
Like, it's very odd.
She does it pretty well, though.
I guess, but it's very odd. So she's about to be kidnapped. She's
by Saeed.
He says, get under the bed. And then there's a beat, and he says, now, this is very important, they're going to take you. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I don't know why. I just totally responded to that. So months later, I'm listening to, I think, Doug Benson talk about Taken, and his big gripe with that movie is, why does he make her get under the bed if he knows they're going to take her? She could just sit in the middle of the room, and they would take her.
And not be dragged out.
Why go that
deep? She got a nasty bite.
Okay, hide. They're going to take you. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, take her.
Put on your clothes. They're going to take her clothes off.
Exactly. They don't. It's a PG-13 movie.
It's such a short movie, and I have to admit, it's just a stupid fun. I really enjoyed a lot of it, especially Holly Valance. I'm kidding. She is.
I don't know who that is.
She was the pop singer. The singer.
Why do you know her name?
Because I think I saw it in the credits, and assumed it was her, and I think that
is
she's Australian.
Is she a famous person? Is she? Oh, okay.
I think she's famous in Australia, probably on some soap opera that we've never heard of. Okay. I have no idea. So
what a weird, thing to include in the plot.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is kind of weird.
But I love these French action movies because they're bizarre. They're like if aliens watched an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from the 80s, and they're like, let's make one of those. And then it's this weird approximation of an American action movie, and I like that.
I was kind of offended though, because at first it's like the daughter. I'm going to ruin Taken for
okay,
you.
Okay, everyone.
Earmuffs if you haven't seen Taken. But
spoilers for Taken coming up.
Actually,
in 3, 2, Taken.
So she gets taken.
Whoa, there it is, everyone.
She's in Paris, but there's Albanians who take her.
Right.
And it's like, I've never seen Albanians as the villain before.
All white with pink eyes.
A very Edgar Winter villains. So Albanians are the one, and they're running some sort of prostitution, women trade thing.
Sex slavery.
But at the end...
Who wants Maggie Grace as your sex slave, by the way?
Saeed.
Oh.
From Lost. At the end...
Evil Saeed or good
she
Saeed?
She is sold to a sheik.
Yeah.
And she's on a boat on the
Iron
Seine.
Sheik?
I believe so.
He puts her in a camel clutch?
I can't even say what I'm saying.
Everything he says is offensive.
Expletive deleted.
Yeah.
So she's bought by a sheik.
Yeah.
And
which doesn't sound so bad.
Liam Neeson has to go rescue her, and he just starts killing all these Arabs. And it's like, well, that... Okay, I say this also, I'm biased. My wife is Arabic.
So you were fine when he was killing Albanians.
Yes, thank you. You put it in words I could not find with my brain and my mouth. Albania, what have they ever done? They have a weird flag. That's all I know. It's red with, like, two-headed eagle or something. They have a language that no one knows, right? Am I right? So the Arabs come, and they don't really... He just bought her. He didn't kidnap her.
Right.
That's much less...
All he did was make a purchase.
It's much less egregious than actually kidnapping then, like, drugging and putting into the slavery. If I buy something... If I buy a blood diamond...
Made by, like... Right, exactly. Are you a bad guy?
Exactly. Because
You might actually be.
But I bought many, and I'm still not a bad guy. I've seen Blood Diamond.
By the way, good movie.
I just took that off Shadia's cue. It was on her, like, Netflix cue. I'm like, you know this is nice? She's like, oh, I don't want to see that. I'm like, why... I have to go through and, like, wean out, like, really, Lars and the Real Girl again?
Take out all of the... Missed some nuances the first time. Well, no. She has a pig nose. I mean, right. That's adorable.
And, of course, I add A-Team, and I'm the bad guy.
No, I don't think so. That movie's kind of fun.
Right. So, anyway, that's a sampling of what I've seen lately. So, what have you seen, Patrick?
I went last night and saw Drive Angry.
Oh.
And,
My phone, it's funny, it never rang.
No?
It never rang.
It would have been a better choice than seeing Hall Pass.
For JB's birthday.
Right, because those were our choices, but not that much better.
Okay.
I was very disappointed because that movie should be awesome. The trailer's cool. The concept is like, hey, that's entertaining. But it's like, it's a half hour too long. It's too impressed with its own, awareness. A Snakes on a Plane thing. Just like, everything we're doing is cool. Get it? And everything is... it needed, like... It didn't really have any attitude about itself. Like it was surprisingly low energy for a movie called Drive Angry.
Yeah.
And it was like it went on for way too long and the 3D was not that important. I don't like 3D anyway, but like yes, occasionally like a hand gets shot off and flies out at you or something for the most part it was unnecessary.
Well, it's a gimmick. 3D obviously is a gimmick.
Right. And, you know, I guess this is the kind of movie that it should be applied to. But, I was kind of disappointed. I didn't hate it, but I didn't have that much fun with it, which, if you're not going to have fun with a movie called Drive Angry 3D, like, what's the point?
You know, it's funny. You posted this morning on fthismovie.blogspot.com, you posted Nick Cage quotes from movies and YouTube clips, which I thought was great. I actually watched all of them.
Thank you. Some of them are a little long because you have to wait for
I tried to skip to the part.
Yeah.
But I also, I don't know if you saw on Twitter what I did today. I took them and I posted every one of them.
Nice.
With a link to the Blogspot and also the link to the YouTube clip.
Okay.
And it was funny though because I thought it was great. And I'm like, this is going to be great. It's just like the name of the movie, the quote, hashtag Nicolas Cage, and the link. And that's when we lost about 5 people.
Why are all these Nicolas Cage clips in my Twitter feed?
I don't want to talk about Charlie Sheen at all, but Nick Cage is the original crazy. He's the crazy that's like, you know, names his kid Kal-El, and we don't really talk about that. But
Buys Islands.
Right, right.
Bases his entire performance in Peggy Sue Got Married on Pokey from Gumby and Pokey.
Right. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of thing you can only do when you're acting in a movie directed by your uncle.
Right. When you're a Coppola, you get away. Your name is Nicolas Kim Coppola. You can get away with that shit.
I love Nicolas Cage, and I will see any bad movie he's in.
Right.
And he makes mostly bad movies.
I have to say, the Gone in 60 Seconds quote was not that crazy.
No, not really.
It was kind of just a normal quote. Kind of disappointed, you know.
It wasn't the quote so much as the little move he does beforehand,
yeah.
Which is a little over the top. But,
Do you remember that preview for Gone in 60 Seconds?
Oh my god, we saw that preview more than any other preview.
The time it took you to get your popcorn.
It's like you just resent the movie before it even
comes
out. Yeah,
I was very angry. I was driving angry towards it.
And then
that
you
movie.
See the movie and it's like, well, that wasn't that great. Come on, man. Be like, entertaining.
You're going to piss me off in the previews. You might as well be entertaining.
Right. Come on.
Come on, movies!
Anyway, what movie are we talking about tonight?
Who the fuck knows?
Clerks.
Oh, wait. It's a big reveal. Oh, what are we going to talk about? The name, the title.
Okay, I'll give you hints. It's black and white.
And red all over.
It's Red State. we're talking about Clerks from 1994, directed by Kevin K.K. Smith.
That Kevin Smith?
That Kevin Smith.
All right.
At Twitter.
I don't have that much to say about it.
No?
So, if you excuse me, I'm going to go back in your home theater and watch the end of Avatar. Because, holy Moses, that looks awesome.
The blue people win. Spoiler.
What?
The blue people win.
Because they're 10 feet tall?
Yeah, I think so.
Very,
And peace-loving. And that's why they're the best at war. So we're talking about Clerks, and we sort of had this idea to talk. Your wife, actually, I think, came up with the idea to do a show on Clerks like a few months ago. We're like, yeah, that might be interesting. Little did we know that in the meantime, Kevin Smith would like almost completely self-destruct, making it even more timely and perhaps interesting to talk about Clerks. Mm. So obviously, before we start talking about Kevin Smith, let's talk about Clerks.
Yep.
In 1994...
It came out.
I went to...
So did you.
I did in 94.
Zing! Zoinks! Like, Zoinks, Scoob!
I went to my first ever high school football game. It was our homecoming game. I left it halfway through with you to go see Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Before Pulp Fiction, there was a trailer.
October of 94, right?
Yeah. Before Pulp Fiction, there was a trailer for this movie called Clerks that I'd never heard of.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was black and white, and it was like, it's about a guy that works at a video store and a guy that works at a convenience store. And in 1994, those were the only two jobs I'd ever had. I was like, they made a movie about me!
And I'm pretty sure at that time, I was working in a
I'm black and white!
I never worked in a convenience store, but I worked in a video store, like, I think at that time.
Perhaps.
And you had just, I think, quit the video store and were working at the White Hen.
Yeah,
I
was.
Think White Hens are all gone.
All gone. They're all 7-Elevens.
So if you're in the East Coast or West Coast or Poland or India, White Hen is a convenience store. Look it up.
So I was excited to see this movie called Clerks because it was like, this is a movie about me.
Or at least for you.
It's right. Well, for, and the trailer was all just like them bitching about their customers. And I was like, I will get those jokes.
I hate making sandwiches.
So when it came, I do. I still have nightmares about it sometimes. I haven't worked there in 10 years. But so I really do.
I remember going there when it was Sunday nights. You would be working at the
White
Hen.
This isn't White Hen cast.
I want to talk about the White Hen. You would be at the White Hen working from 3 to 11 if that was your shift.
Correct.
3 p.m. to 11 p.m. And I would go there because we're dorks and we didn't drink or do drugs. So we like would hang out and talk about movies. Literally, I would be sitting on the counter.
Right. I would work till 11. Then we would go to your house and watch A Low Down Dirty Shame.
That's right.
With, and eat sandwiches.
That you had prepared.
That I had prepared for us. Yeah.
He'll make you sandwiches too. All right, so anyway, I'm sorry.
So Clerks didn't really get a wide release. It played at one theater in the city called Piper's Alley, and I went with my dad.
Wow.
And I liked it, but it wasn't the movie that I wanted it to be, which was, it wasn't, there's only just this one little brief section that's about making fun of customers. I wanted the whole movie to be that, and it wasn't. It was mostly about, like, guys complaining about their girlfriends and talking about their dicks and stuff. So I liked it, but I didn't go crazy for it. And then shortly thereafter, I think I bought a Laserdisc player, and when Clerks came out on Laserdisc, I watched it and started liking it a lot more. Even more so because I listened to the commentary track. It was like one of the first commentaries I'd ever heard. And I liked Kevin Smith so much on the commentary track. I didn't even realize until that point that he was the guy playing Silent Bob.
Right, right.
Because it came out at a time, I think on the like the Hook podcast, I talked about how I just, that came out in 91. And that was sort of the beginning of me becoming aware of like movies outside of...
like the wide release,
major. Or even just outside of the movie itself, like that the what goes into making a movie, or you know what I mean, like
not really,
the,
no, I'm sorry.
Behind the scenes okay, stuff, okay. Or just any of what the grosses are, that kind of shit, just everything surrounding the movie. Because up until that point, I really was just like, that's the movie, and that's it. And so, you know, from 91 to 94, I sort of made this gigantic leap forward and discovered all these different kinds of movies and rented Reservoir Dogs. And I was like, holy shit, there's a whole world out there that I haven't seen yet.
Right.
And so around the time of Clerks was sort of when I started to peak on like reading books about the Sundance Film Festival and like reading the book,
Spike Mike,
right. Spike Mike, Slackers and Dykes, or like reading the Robert Rodriguez book and like learning
Rebel Without a Crew,
learning the backstory of El Mariachi.
That's a great, like, I actually love that book. That's a great book.
It's very entertaining, and trying to like seek out all of those movies, and like Ken's World of Video had two for a dollar catalog titles, and I would go, it was 24 hours, and I would just go get that six place, movies at a time.
I'm like, so depressed now because I'll drive by in Roselle, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, and you drive by and it's like, it's empty. It's nothing there still.
Just put Ken's World of Video back. 24 hours, 50 cent movies, and I just was consuming movies like crazy. And Clerks will always remind me of that time in my life.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly how I feel, and it was a little different for me. And
because you've never seen Clerks.
I don't know.
It's black and white. That's gay.
I hate black and white. Does it have subtitles, too? I hate subtitles. No, I saw it. I think the first time I saw it was with you on your Laserdisc, if I'm not mistaken, because...
Probably. And I was all like, hold on, Doug. We're 45 minutes in. I got to flip it over.
I'm still like that with my 7 DVD. anyway, so you bought the disc, and I remember vividly watching Pulp Fiction, and the preview was Clerks, and it was like, holy, we're definitely going to see that. And you saw it with your dad, and you, I think I was calling a lot that day, and no one answered the phone. I didn't know where my best friend was, and that's cool, though. I mean, it's not. I don't remember it still to this day. But I remember watching with you at your mom's house in the back room area, yeah. And just, like, you know, I responded to it pretty strongly. And again, the movie is kind of a mess, but I watched it, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
I watched it
last night. We're going to be all over the place here.
To kind of refresh myself, because I've seen the movie probably 5 or 6 times, but the last time I saw it was a couple years ago. So I refreshed myself last night with the Clerks X disc, the 10th anniversary disc from 2004, which is a pretty good, you know.
The X-rated Clerks.
The X-rated Clerks. And the movie is a mess, but there's still something about it that is charming and sweet. And I think that even taken apart from the whole, what's in the movie, it's again, the context of our, and again, you, if you've listened to the podcast before, you know, Patrick and I are in our early 30s and we're of that generation that was very in high school and late in high school, early college when all this stuff was kind of happening. So it's like, we're totally plugged in to this grunge, you know, of if there was a grunge movement for film, this is what it was. Mm-hmm. And watching it, I just am reminded of that time and kind of, you know, it's a nostalgic emotion that I have. So we've done this a lot on podcasts too, where you go back to something old and you kind of have your more adult reaction to it.
Right.
And I almost thought, not that I wanted to feel a certain way about it, but I almost thought to myself, I'm not going to like it as much.
Yeah.
And I did. I still liked it because it benefits from that. Because it is of this moment, of this time in my life, much different, you know, simpler, as cliched and dumb as that sounds, a simpler time where you're, you know, watching movies with your good friend in a house and you have no responsibilities. And it's right. Like, man, right. There's nothing like that. Even if my favorite movie now, it's still like the context is, well, I had to work the next day and I had to do all these other things and right. I had to buy the car. And that's the year I got married. And it's just like, this is the year I did nothing except watch movies and like do homework, right. You know?
Well, and by the same token that it was around the time, like you said, grunge, that like alternative music was sort of starting to break through.
Oh yeah, here we are now. Entertain us, Kevin Smith.
like this was sort of when alternative movies started sort of finally coming into the mainstream, and it was like, oh, it's not just these same movies that are playing at, you know, the Woodfield Mall Theater or whatever, and it was like, here's these different kind of quirky offbeat movies, and those have sort of since been absorbed into the mainstream system, and right. You know, now everything is Transformers.
Well,
but,
quick side note to that point, I mentioned earlier, I was watching the Independent Spirit Awards, which are just insufferable and long and, you know, ugly. There's no time limits, and it's the whole point is like, there's no rules.
Right.
And it's just like a dumb show to watch, and nothing interesting is said, even though Joel McHale was pretty funny, actually. But I'm watching this, and I know that in obviously music and movies have a lot of similarities in their arc and their progression and evolution in life. That's my stomach. That's weird. My stomach just gurgled. And I know the days of like indie music, and that's been co-opted because, you know, indie music now is like just a band that no one's heard of.
Now you have to go super underground, right?
Right. And it's like, so you've got music that once was indie, that was unsigned, that was like bootleg tapes passed back and forth between friends and stuff. And then they maybe luckily got signed or by a label that was really an independent small label that was like run out of a basement in some guy's house in Chicago or LA or something. And now that then it was bought by, you know, Reprise or whatever. And the same is true, I think, with movies to some extent, because you've got these small little, you know, self-produced, self-released movies in theaters. They would rent out movie palaces or whatever and then show their movie for one night and put all their money in that. And the funniest thing is watching, like now, and again, we're so fucking jaded and just like it's such a crazy world right now. And I'm actually not pessimistic. I'm not a negative person, I don't think.
I am.
But there's an element to like, all the nominees for Best Picture in the Independent Spirit Awards. And who's there? Like, Nicole Kidman's there, and all these, like, you know, every A-lister is there.
Right.
And the girl from, you know, some movie you never heard of. Right. Like, they do that just to, like, keep their cred. But Black Swan wins, like, everything.
Right.
And it's like...
Oh, Black Swan released by Fox?
Right. And is right. It's so it's not 20th Century Fox, but it's Fox Searchlight.
Starring the girl from the Star Wars movies.
Right. And I'm just thinking, like, what? This is mind-boggling to me, because you can say, like, okay, you've got whatever Paramount that has their independent arm that releases this, but it's still fucking Paramount. And if right. they need more money, even if they maybe have... You only have a budget of X. Well, we need... It's like, if the movie's doing well, guess what? They're getting...
Right.
All the support that a major studio can provide them. And it really irks me. I'm done.
Clerks.
The end.
So we love Clerks for what it represents, time-wise.
Bow on top.
But like you said, I mean, it is a mess, but it's almost like I can't imagine it any other way.
Right.
And all of its faults become... virtues, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
the weird sort of stiff acting by mostly amateurs
right.
and the editing and the
right.
static camera work and all that. Like, it's all part of that movie's aesthetic, and trying to picture it with like better, more polished actors or something,
well,
it would not be the same
I
movie
think what,
at all.
What happens is you got Clerks 2.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, where it's like it's you know, Technicolor 24,
right.
or 35 millimeter. 24 frames per second. Shit.
Finally, he's running his films at 24 frames a second.
I felt gypped before. So you've got like the full frame, full color, beautifully
right.
shot, you know.
Rosario
not really
Dawson.
Beautifully shot.
No, definitely
still
not.
Just
still
garbage,
a Kevin Smith movie.
But still full color.
Right.
And everyone's now become a cartoon character. And there's
right.
something also to quickly talk about. Jay and Silent Bob in Clerks is excellent. That's something I think that you said before, that there's, you know, stiff performances, or that there's, you know, mistakes, or that bad line deliveries and all these things, and they're endearing. The two things I think are the best in that movie are Jay and Silent Bob. Jay Mews in that movie, he's not acting. He is...
Yeah, it's like they just found that guy.
He is so authentic,
right.
and it's like one of those things where you don't want to, like, you know, that guy in real life would kick your ass, which is, I think, something Ben Affleck said in talking about Mallrats, or maybe...
Jason Lee.
Jason Lee said,
yeah, he totally
like,
did.
He was like, you know, I don't want to meet this guy, he's going to kick my ass. And of course, Jamie is like a really sweet guy
right.
who just happens to be very troubled.
Right.
But you watch this, and even there's a
Yeah, they do seem like dangerous in them.
They are very, and it's like the way they act, how like in your face they are.
Yeah.
There's no snoochy boochies. There's no, you know, all these cartoon things that I've later... you know, have morphed
right.
into.
Right.
But there's the one line, it's my favorite line, or my favorite little piece in the movie where... Jay Mews is, they're about to close up shop. It's near the end. And Jay talks to Dante and is like, you know, I seen that girl. And he kind of messes up his line. I think it was
right.
a mistake that
yeah.
they keep in, but it's so authentic and it doesn't feel like a film mistake. It just
right.
feels like he just stumbled
right.
and he's high, and he probably was. And of course, even when Silent Bob talks, he does the words of wisdom and kind of
right.
like the, you know, the clarifying statement of the movie. It hasn't become this, you know, cartoonish, like, I'm only going to speak to say
right,
the
right.
themes or the hypothesis,
right.
you know, all the
right.
bullshit. So I really just love it. And that first to me is like, man. And then of course you see Mallrats where they're like, you know, a Batman.
And
they're still funny. I actually still like them in Mallrats, but they're different. And then ever since then, it's a joke, you know?
Right.
It's just,
right. They're very cartoonish, you know, by design. But,
right.
Yeah, I have sort of long thought, and I've been a Kevin Smith fan for a long time, even though I find fault with almost every single one of his movies. I've always liked him, and I always enjoy reading stuff from him and listening to his commentary tracks and watching like his Q&A DVDs and stuff. I've just always really liked him as a guy, and now that's changed in the last year or
yeah,
so.
It's unfortunately changed because
yeah.
there is an element to him that's like he's a really endearing, genuine, like real person who
right.
is from Jersey and just so happens to have made a lot of movies and like, but he's still one of us. I know that sounds so fucking dumb.
Right. But he still talks in those terms and just like, he watches the movies that we watch and
right.
he likes the stuff that we like. And all that has changed because he's insufferable now. But so I've always liked him. And I think since Clerks, I think I've seen every one of his movies like on opening day. And I don't know if that's something to be proud of or not, but it was like, hey, there's a new Kevin Smith movie opening. I'm going to go see it.
You're going to see Red State opening day and Hit Somebody opening day?
I assume I will. No, I don't know. But I will see them, you know. So for a long time, I mean, I would consider myself a Kevin Smith fan, again, even though I know a lot of his movies are problematic to terrible.
Well, he's also become like a product in a way. Like, he makes movies. And unlike, you know, there's a lot of directors out there that say a film by so-and-so. Right. It's like, who the heck is this? Who cares? Like, I don't care if it's your film, but he definitely is part and parcel of his movies.
And, well, and he's basically only making movies for his audience.
Right.
Because anybody outside of his audience doesn't really give a shit about him.
And if nothing else, too, he's really kind of embraced the whole marketing, every aspect of his movies. I mean, I was flipping through, like, one of the inserts in the DVD, and it's just, like, all the... the movie, all the characters and figurines
he's
and comic
whore.
Book shops.
Yeah.
He's absolutely a whore. But it's not such a bad thing. Well, it's becoming a bad thing, but it wasn't such a bad thing when it's like, yeah, let's make an action figure of ourselves. It's so dumb. It's these two stoners, you know?
And again, if he didn't have this huge fan base willing to buy all that shit, he couldn't do it. So it's not like he's 100% to blame.
Right.
But I always thought Chasing Amy was his best movie, and I probably still do because it's there's a lot of problems with Chasing Amy, I think even more than Clerks. But it deals with stuff obviously that's more adult and realistic as a movie can be about a lesbian who enters into a straight relationship. So I've always thought that, but watching Clerks again, I think Clerks might be his best movie, and maybe that sucks because it means it was all downhill after that. But it's the most consistent. It's the most sort of a piece. Well, like it all works as this movie.
And obviously best movie is such a relative term because you know, you've got Mallrats, which was a bomb.
Right.
They tried to make like a Porky's or a modern day Porky's and with like tits and, you know, swears and whatever. And it was a bomb, but I still remember watching it and really enjoying it. And it's such a dumb movie, but it's, and there's so many bad performances, but it's a really cute movie, I guess.
Yeah.
And some of the other ones like Jane Silent Bob, it's just masturbatory, like, you know, but it's, there's still a lot of funny stuff going on and, you know.
Right.
But yeah, Clerks, if that's his best movie, I remember watching Chasing Amy thinking, and it was like, if you know Kevin Smith and have followed movies like we have, and not to, even to say that we followed movies so much, but you know that
that's
like,
what the F stands for.
That was his...
Follow this movie.
That Kevin Smith grew up, you know, that was his Smith has grown up, and I'm making a serious movie about relationships and being an adult, and it had production value, not so much like that it was, it looked expensive, but it was done in such a way that was like more... respectful approach to the craft, I guess. And, but you watch it now and it's like, there's still some things that are just like, what is going on with this thing?
Yeah. He makes just a ton of bad choices. And like,
well, he makes a ton of choices.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true,
just putting everything, like he has an idea. It goes on the screen. It's like visual jokes, spoken jokes. Like, you know,
well,
it's
and
all
I think
over
Dogma
the
is the movie that suffers from that more than anything because you have these sort of sincere, fairly difficult to grasp religious concepts and then like a monster made out of poo in the same movie. And in theory, I'm in favor of that.
Sure.
Not the poo part because poo is never funny, but like, yeah, I want a movie that can be all these different things, but that movie is a mess. So I'm actually a fan of Clerks 2 and I know that you are not. And I know that that movie has terrible, terrible problems. There are things in that movie, like I think that movie has some things to say. I think it was his last movie that he made that had anything to say. Just about people that age, people at that station in their life, where he was at that point in his life. And I think there's a sincerity to the good parts of that movie that make it work for me, even though I recognize that a ton of it is terrible. And I compare it to I am now and have been for a long time a fan of the Howard Stern Show, as I know you are. And when you tell people that, they don't want to shake your hand.
Well, there's two people in the world, the people that either get it or people that think he's the devil.
And the people that don't like it, you know, tend to write it off because they say, oh, it's just about sex and interviewing porn stars and spanking girls and all this shit. And the show can be that.
The show can be that often with like Sibian rides and throwing balloons
and
porn stars' asses.
And neither of us like
that
stuff.
It's so like, I don't like listening to it on the radio. It's like boring to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Neither of us care about that shit. What we always talk about, what we really like, is like the first hour of the show and the last hour. And that's just when they're just talking to each other about their lives and their opinions. And they're just being people having conversation. And to me, Clerks is the first hour of the Stern Show. It's just people talking about their opinions and their lives.
Sure.
And Clerks 2 is all that other shit where it's like, it's a guy fucking a donkey and like crazy stuff that he, like set pieces that he has to come up with and he has to be outrageous. And, you know, Kevin Smith, unfortunately, is a guy who thinks, you know, that being gross or being smutty or whatever is really automatically funny. And it's not.
Definitely. Yeah. There's an element that's like, if you put that in your movie, it's just like instant laughs. And it's like, you have to earn laughs in any respect, you know?
Right. Like, you look at something like Zach and Miri Make a Porno, where right. Jeff Anderson gets covered in shit, and it's just like, why did you think that that would be funny to an audience?
I honestly don't even remember that movie. Like, I don't remember, and honestly, I don't remember a lot of Clerks 2. Clerks 2 also.
Right.
Because I saw these movies. I saw Clerks 2 in the theater, and I saw them both in the theater, at the same theater, and it was like, my response to them was kind of the same. I didn't hate either of them, but I was so confused. Like, what is this, you know? And I want to like Kevin Smith so much. And the funny thing is, too, you know, we talked briefly about Quentin Tarantino. We saw Pulp Fiction in 94, and that was his second movie after Reservoir Dogs. And, of course, Pulp Fiction is the movie that kind of changed 90s movies,
right.
At least that type of movie in the 90s. And you couldn't make a movie after that without kind of cribbing some styles.
Sunglasses and a gun.
Right, right. And right. Even like visual era of the spoken, how the characters talk to each other and stuff.
Right, right, right.
It's actually kind of in line with the Kevin Smith. Like they talk very fast and they're talking about a lot of random stuff about things while other stuff's going on, kind of. You
right,
know?
Right, right.
But I remember, you know, Quentin Tarantino made Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Quentin Tarantino has not made a bad movie. He has, everything he's done has been excellent. The worst thing he's made probably was his quarter of Four Rooms. And even that is the best part of Four Rooms.
Yeah, I used to think it was the Robert Rodriguez segment, but when I watched it again a couple years ago, it's not.
Right, right, right.
That has not aged well.
And I'm just thinking that Quentin Tarantino is the and I love him. And I know people out there
you
don't.
You should marry him. Get down on your knee and say, Quentar.
Quentar Tarantino.
Will you be my husband? Show him your feet. He digs that.
Wait, he's the husband?
Yes! You're the bride.
But I remember, it was kind of those...
kiddo, the bride.
One of those things is like, I remember watching those both at the same time and kind of growing with both directors as a viewer.
Yeah.
And they have taken such divergent paths.
Right.
Where I still love Inglourious Basterds, I think, is one of the best movies of the past decade, if not, you know, in the top whatever of all whatever. it's so great. And I can't say that about Kevin Smith. I still like him. Because even during, I was watching the Q&A portion of the DVD for Clerks 2, it was made, I think, 94 they shot this thing. And he still is a likable guy who, like, acknowledges his mistakes and is very honest. And, for example, I'm going to jump to this, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah.
The original ending of Clerks.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, spoilers, the original ending of Clerks has Dante. Let's some context. Dante and...
It's a movie about Clark.
Dante and Randall...
Kevin Smith.
...have just fought, and they made up, and they're... Randall's leaving, and Dante's shift is ending. And Randall grabs the sign, the homemade sign that says, we're open, and tosses it in and says, you're closed. What a perfect ending.
Cut to Soul Asylum song.
Right.
Movie over.
Cut to Suzanne by Weezer. I'm kidding. Was that Mallrats?
Yes, it was.
So then that's how the movie ends. Like, rightfully so. That's a great ending because that's whatever. There's some open-ended stuff, but it's still like we've spent a time. It's all it is you're spending.
It's one day.
It's one day.
And here's the end of the day.
Right. So the original ending was Kevin Smith in his, you know, kind of newness of writing scripts. And, you know, like I don't want to fault him because it's like it's your first screenplay. Like,
right.
It's hard to end a movie. I would assume I've never finished a screenplay.
Because it's that hard.
It is very hard. In the original ending, he closes up, and it's like, it's the shot, and you know what's coming, like, because it's such a weird shot, like...
It switches to point of view
point
all of a sudden.
Point of view of a customer, and right. It's all dark, and he walks in, there's no music, it's like the doorbell, the door jingling, the bell on the door, and Dante looks up and goes, oh, it's not, it's, he thinks it's Randall, he looks up, he says, oh, it's not you, oh, we're closed.
Right.
And it's a guy, who I think it's, is it the same guy that, like, is playing hockey?
No.
Okay, it looks like he's wearing the same flannel shirt,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a guy pulls
there's like
a gun.
The same five guys play everybody
well,
in
right.
Movie,
he pulls a gun and shoots Dante and kills Dante and then robs the store.
Right.
And I almost for 1 second could see like, okay, let's say that's your ending. Cause you are the clerk and obviously Kevin Smith had been a clerk for a long time and that's his life. And you know that there's some danger to the job. You're all by yourself. There's a lot of money, you know, like that. This is part and parcel of the work, you know? But what the fuck? Like, why would you ever end your movie like that, you know? And thankfully, I think Miramax, once they got their hands on it, said like, oh, that's awful. And to Kevin Smith, my point in saying this is like in the Q&A, to his credit, he'll be like, he admits and owns up to the story when he's talking to Miramax and they're saying, oh, why? We have to change the ending because you've spent an hour and a half with these characters. You've gotten to love them. You've gotten to, you know, you spend a day with them. You think Randall's hilarious. Dante's sweet and blah, blah, blah. And you kill him because you don't know how to end a movie. And Kevin Smith admits this, and I think that's, like, pretty, you know, great that he's willing to own up to that mistake and say, yeah, this ending is a better ending. Not as so much like a director's cut versus whatever. This right. is, it's better,
right.
the theatrical version.
Well, and at the time, he has said, you know, his big influence was Do the Right Thing, because he says it's this movie that's, like, kind of fun and funny for, like, an hour, and then there's this very serious tonal shift, and it becomes very yeah. dramatic. But, like, A, Do the Right Thing isn't necessarily, like, hilariously funny for the first hour, and B, everything in that movie builds to that tonal shift. It's not like this quick
right.
switch where all of a sudden Spike Lee is like, and then somebody gets shot, and then, you know, Mookie throws a fucking trash can through a window or whatever. Like, it's, everything works in that movie. So, it's just funny how he interprets that, and he's like, so I'll have Dante get shot right. at the end, and right, that's right. like, Do the Right Thing. Like, oh, no.
Wow, and then I'll have him free-wrapped to the camera. Right.
Oh, you're so young.
And it's interesting, too, on the 10th anniversary disc, the way it originally looks, the way he shot, it's 16mm, yeah. black and white.
Yeah.
The shittiest, like, it yeah. looks like VHS, like, you yeah. know, your parents' old huge camcorder, and how great Miramax cleaned it up, and it's, you know, and it's, but to you, as you said, it's meant to be that gritty and that grainy.
Right.
And even the cleanup version is not, doesn't look great, you know, just, it looks.
I remember when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, is it, like, all supposed to look like it's shot on, like, security cameras, right. you know, like, that's fucking brilliant. Oh, no, it's not that at all.
Right.
There's a documentary on the anniversary disc, or it's also on the Blu-ray, called The Snowball Effect, and it's like this very comprehensive documentary that's like from the time Kevin Smith was born until Clerks is finished and sold and is released. And it's great. If you're a fan of the movie, or if you're a fan of Kevin Smith, you really, really should watch it. And it's such a testament. I mean, any like wannabe filmmaker should really watch it to be inspired, but at the same time, it's like, it's such a testament to how much luck is involved. It's
totally serendipitous, yeah.
Right. They made this movie. They didn't think anybody was going to see it. But then he read somewhere that when Richard Linklater made Slacker, he showed it at the independent film market or something in New York. So he was like, well, that's what we'll do. And they showed it on a Sunday morning. No one showed up. It was dead. But it just so happened that one guy was in the audience, Bob Hawke, who was able to get it to, you know, Amy Taubin, or he got in touch with John Pearson, and then John Pearson represented them, and they got into Sundance, and then Miramax buys it because there's a guy at Miramax right. who really likes it, and he has to convince Harvey Weinstein to buy it because Harvey Weinstein walked out of it because he didn't like the anti-smoking rant at the beginning.
It's bizarre.
And Kevin Smith's entire career is built on Bob Hawke being one of, you know, 15 people in that first audience.
I think it was even less than that. I think it was like, it might have been like, I think I read this in that, was it in Spike Mike Slacker's and Dice? It was like literally him. I think it was, I mean, it was just like this one guy. I mean, it was, yeah. and even if it wasn't, if it was 15 people, it's still this tale of, I'm going to make this movie. And even what's interesting too is like, it wasn't just that a guy loved movies and decided to make a movie. He like went to the Vancouver and he still dropped out early, but it's like right. he had some sort of motivation, right. impetus to kind of make this thing. And
I don't know that Kevin Smith, you know, there's some guys that like, yeah, they got a break, but you just feel like they would have made it anyway. They're that talented. Right. I don't know that Kevin Smith is that guy.
You know, and I guess, yeah, to that, it's, I do like Kevin Smith, or I did. I mean, I still do, even though he's just insufferably douchey and always high and wearing jorts and talking, you know, shit about his wife, or, you know, it's just, it's really hard to listen to his Twitter rants and, you know, just the world owes him or something.
Right. Well, yeah, I was going to get to.
Yeah. Well, I talk about, my point is, I have no point because I think I'm high right now. My jorts. No, it's that it is this thing. As much as I like him, it's, I cannot believe that story. That story sounds so, it's a movie, you know, it is.
Right.
Like, it's completely.
And at the same time, I'm actually thankful because like I said, I don't know that he would have made it anyway, but like, I'm glad that happened because right. I'm glad that his voice got out there. I think.
Has he helped any other filmmaker make movies?
Yeah. I mean, he has friends that he's produced movies for okay. and, helped fund and release.
I was gonna say, that's the ultimate, like, yeah. I'm pay it forward.
None of them are very which, good.
Let's talk about pay it forward.
None of them are very good. He helped his friend Brian Johnson make a movie called Vulgar, starring Brian O'Halloran, who plays Dante, like a kid's party clown who gets like raped and beat up by hillbillies.
God, that's what.
You can borrow it if you want. It's on my shelf.
Who wants to watch that? Yeah. You know, like
He helped Jeff Anderson direct a movie called Now You Know, which isn't great. Rashida Jones is in it.
Oh, I love
His friend.
Did you hear she won the Oscar for Marry Me?
His friend. He helped his friend Malcolm make a documentary called Small Town Gay Bar, which you have now seen or was in your Netflix queue.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
It's worth watching.
Okay.
So he has helped out. But, you know, I do think, for better or worse, like, I think Kevin Smith, and more specifically Clerks, is very much a movie of, like, that generation.
Right.
Just, like, not sure what to do, kind of stuck in a dead-end job, kind of lazy, but, you know, definitely sort of living through pop culture or whatever, right. You know? I think it has a lot to say about his generation, not intentionally.
It's interesting to think, too, about just how it was made, to go back to that for 2 seconds. And the if you've read Spike, Mike, Slackers, and Dykes, it kind of, it's this whole second movement of independent, you know, it's so depressing to think that was, you know, almost 20 years ago, and just, yeah. You know, it's just, I don't see another certain, you know, maybe the web will kind of, maybe the net will kind of inspire some more, you know, up-and-coming filmmakers right. to make stuff, but it's all, like, it has to be sponsored by, like, BMW or something
right.
in order for it to get, like, viewership.
Yeah,
the
system has changed so much.
And it's cheap to say, or it's easy to say it's a broken system, but there's something about it that's just so, like, you know, skewed not
right.
towards talent and not towards,
well, and the irony is, at the same time, it's never been easier to, like, make a movie.
Right.
Because
technology,
the technology
yeah.
is so readily available and get it out there. I mean, may not, you know, not distributed by a studio because
right.
that I think has become harder than ever. But
right.
to get it out, you know, for free or whatever.
That's even the same way with music too, to go back to that stupidly, to talk about maybe you can record something on a computer and,
right.
but yeah, there's no, like, no one's going to take a gamble on a band from, you know, Omaha that, you know,
right.
sells out the local club. It's like, no, you got to do, I don't know what.
They're barely releasing albums from established artists.
Right. And it's all like what Justin Bieber was on YouTube and all of a sudden some person saw him and like they was attached to Usher and all this stuff happened. It's just like, well, that's how things have to
that's
happen
why you, that's why you never say never.
I don't.
I don't ever say never.
I don't. I do not.
So the
never,
thing that,
ever
the
say
thing
never.
That bums me out about never. Kevin Smith is that I've been pretty loyal to him all these years, and now he just seems interested in shitting on me or anyone like me. But B, you know, you watch the Snowball Effect, and like he's just this kid who gets taken on this ride and caught up in a thing, and he's given a career.
Right.
You know, through his talent, he made a good movie, and presented himself as someone with a voice. It's not just like a fucking fluke that he got a career, but like he's given a career again, sort of almost by chance. And he does seem appreciative of it and genuinely sort of like surprised at all this happening. And then you cut to years later and like, he couldn't be less interested in like shitting all over the, like you said, now he feels like the world owes him something. It's like, no, you're lucky to be in this position. And again, he's built himself an empire over the years. So maybe he can say, no, fuck you. I've earned
right.
the position I'm now.
The door
in.
Was opened to him, but now he's the one who entered it himself.
Exactly.
And, right.
Like I couldn't be this guy in 94. Sure. But
came.
You know, it's been almost 20 years and now I can be this guy. And it's, very sad because, you know, he made Zach and Mary Make a Porno and it really felt like someone trying to imitate a Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah.
And there are scenes in that movie that work, I think mostly because of Seth Rogen, but overall, obviously the movie doesn't work. And again, you kind of see what he's trying to do, like in the way that Clerks 2 isn't exactly about what it's about. Zach and Miri is sort of about, and he said as much, I think, when he was making the movie, that like Zach and Miri is sort of about the making of Clerks, where it's like, we want to do something, we want
right.
to create something, and it's about, let's pull this group together, and let's make this movie unconventionally, and blah, blah, blah. It just happens to be a porno, and there's people pooing in it, and that's unfortunate, but like...
Funny? Hilarious?
Yeah, it's funny poo.
Oh, yeah.
But there's an idea there. But it's him imitating himself. And then he makes Cop Out. And the Cop Out is where it all ends. Because, you know, the critical community rejected Cop Out, rightfully so, because it was a bad movie.
And he would fall back on the excuse, well, it's the first movie that I directed that I didn't write. And then,
right. The excuse he would fall back on was like, what do you expect? It's a stupid buddy cop movie called Cop Out. Well, like, make a good buddy cop movie
right.
called Cop Out. Don't just say like, no, lower your fucking expectations, people.
Right.
Like, no, that's not really fair. So when that movie was rejected, he turned into this giant asshole who was just like, well, fuck critics and fuck everyone and I don't make movies for critics and I'm not screening movies anymore. And then we get to the whole fucking Red State debacle, which is he goes back and makes a movie that's not a comedy. He's sort of, you know, another sort of independent movie. Okay, great. I'm interested in that. He announces he's going to pick a distributor at Sundance, and there's all this hype, and all these different people go to possibly buy Red State, and it all turns out to be a fucking PR scam where he buys it himself for $20 and he's going to self-distribute and like four wallet around the country until October and then release it himself, and then he's making one more movie and then he's retiring, and it just, it makes me so sad that he's turned into this guy who I can no longer defend liking.
Yeah, you know,
I can't even like, really.
I'm sure he would defend himself and say, like, you know, I've been put in this, I'm backed in a corner, and I'm put in this situation. I'm trying to, like, put myself in his shoes. Like, I've made a string of movies, and some successful, some not successful, but all for my audience.
Right.
And that's debatable, obviously, too, because Cop Out is not for his audience at all. I mean...
Right, that was sort of the movie that was supposed to be for everyone.
Right, but and it's kind of for no one. If nothing else, Kevin Smith, and again, we've said multiple times on this podcast that we liked him a lot. Like, I would literally, I think back when I was 18-year-old, Doug would be like, I love Quentin Tarantino, like every 18-year-old. Kevin Smith and, like, you know, whatever else.
Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah, probably, right? I love Ghost Dog. And I really, really liked him. And I remember, like, watching stuff, like, opening day and buying the DVD, like, opening, like, on Tuesday, like, or whenever. They come out Tuesdays, right?
Yeah.
And buying it and just, like, watching it and watching all the extras, which I don't even have time for anymore. Even the best movies, it's like, oh, man, I'm never going to get to that commentary track.
His extras were often more worth watching than the movies.
The Mallrats extra, I still say the commentary track on Mallrats is so great and funny.
I probably watch that more than I watch Mallrats.
Yeah, it's just Ben Affleck actually really, really funny.
Yeah.
Chasing
Amy also.
So he now has become like, so he's angry and older, and he's got a wife who I think he would consider a hot wife. That is, I don't consider her hot. Wasn't she in Jay and Silent? No,
yeah,
she was in Jay. She was like the one. It was like the cabal of hot chicks. It's Allie Larder and
Eliza Dushku and Shannon Elizabeth.
And
I take issue with a lot of that, actually. But
it's still, it's like I could see where they're the hot chicks, and then it's this wife, and it's, or his girl, like the chick he wants to bang, and now he's married to her, and he just talks.
I think
about
they were married at
the time. Taint, you know, on Twitter, and I get it, like you're. Part of your shtick now is that you've got 1 million or 2 million followers on Twitter. You follow like 60, and it's like all you do is do long form things. But also, part of it too, and I know you've talked about this before, maybe not on podcasts, but in your about.com gig or whatever else, like you like Doug Benson a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Benson is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of Doug Benson's humor is derived from him being a huge pothead, like or super Jaime.
Yeah.
Jaime?
Super Jaime.
And it's his humor, obviously. He kind of plays like the stoner, and that's, you know, his shtick. But I think it's beyond that. If you were just to examine it on that level, it's like, yeah, he's the guy that smokes pot all the time. But it's like, no, he's a really funny guy,
right?
Despite that or whatever. And it's like he can maybe use that as a crutch or whatever. Kevin Smith apparently is, I don't know if he always was like a big stoner, but
no, just started during like Zach and Mary Make a Porno.
But I think, because I know he probably smoked pot before, but I think he's chronic now. Like,
yeah, every day.
And it's like he's you know, just, I don't even care that he's like, you know, like a bigger guy. Who cares about that shit? But like that you're a pothead and then you sit there and you are on your computer and blasting off like scathing comments to people and ripping on people and stuff like that. And granted, yes, people rip on you, but you've known this since you did all your movies, like the movie Poop Shoot, Magnolia Fan bullcrap. Like obviously there's always been a group of people out there that have not liked your stuff. So you, having known that, why would all of a sudden you're offended now? And it's like, you've got to retaliate. And it's like, I don't know, man.
Well, the internet has really given him a voice and like almost a purpose in life. And at the same time, you know, it's what has helped establish his career. He's a guy who figured out how to use that to his advantage very early on and has really built himself an empire largely based on the internet, even if it's just selling all that shit that you were talking about. Right. Like the internet was the place to go buy it. Yeah, it's a bummer because I still do really like Clerks, and I mean I like watching a lot of his movies. I'll even watch Dogma from time to time, even though Dogma is like it's literally 2 hours of people explaining shit because he has all these ideas, but he hasn't figured out how to like make them work as a narrative. So it's just like, wait, so you mean this? Yeah, if this happens, then this. Oh, and it's 2 hours of that.
Right.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, like you said, is masturbatory, but has a few scenes that are really, really funny.
Yeah, there's some stuff in there that I laugh so hard at.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just you take the good with the bad, and that's how it's always been with Kevin Smith. It's like, well, it ain't perfect, but man, it's like it's made for me.
Right.
And it's funny. It speaks a language that I can't, that my parents might not necessarily understand.
Right.
But now it's like, well, it's not made for me. And it's not speaking to me at all. And maybe, have I grown? Of course. But so is he. And it's like, so we've all grown. But like, but I don't know if he has found like an audience. Like he used to make movies for a certain type of people. Now he's just making movies for the ether. You know, it's like, yeah, who's it I don't made know. For?
Right. And so now his plan is to like retire and just get into like maybe distributing, which to go back to his plan for Red State, and this is not my this thought doesn't originate with me. I think this came from Drew McWeeny on HitFix. But
go on,
you had me at McWeeny. he was talking about the whole plan for distribution on Red State and how Kevin Smith's whole thing is like it's so expensive to market and distribute a movie. Why would I do that? I'll just do it myself. Why would I, you know, spend $4 million on a movie and then spend $20 million to market it? Right. I'm not going to do that. Okay, sure. I can prove that this model can work. Well, no, because you come with a built-in audience. If I go make a movie tomorrow, I can't. This model doesn't work. It's not an example of like, here, independent filmmakers, here's how to get your movie out. That doesn't work. It works for Kevin Smith, even more so than like a lot of other name directors. Because
Well, his audience is loyal as we are. And it's just, I mean, again, like I'll see Red State. I know I will.
Yeah, and right. I won't go see it while he's four. While you know, his whole plan is to like take it to specific cities. Charge really high ticket prices.
Yeah, in Chicago, it's at not the Chicago Theater. It's at some other kind of smaller theater.
Yeah.
But it's 75 or what is it?
Right.
A pop.
Right.
A ticket. It's
to see the movie and then to see him do a Q&A afterwards, which, okay, there's value in that. But again, you know, even if, I don't know, if some other director was coming around doing that, people are not going to pay $80.
It's really got to be the right director. And I'm trying to think, right, as you said that, I'm like thinking, what directors would I want to go see?
And there are people that I absolutely would do that for.
Well, you especially, and I don't mean to say, but you are a different kind of breed, but like the normal kind of like, I like movies, you know, that kind of guy.
Right. I'm nobody
between
would do
the two,
it, right.
the two you right. and that type. But it's like, I don't even know like who I would go see aside from, you know, like. I don't know. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson, I'd see something he would do.
Yeah, right. I was totally supposed to see him once, too, and he canceled. He was supposed to be at the Punch Drunk Love premiered at the Chicago Film Festival.
You know, it's so funny.
He canceled, like, the day of.
Sounds so douchey, but, like, the whole argument, Kevin Smith, again, trying to, like, dumbly put myself in his shoes or whatever, like, that movie Poop Shoot in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they're making fun of these Blunt Man and Chronic characters, and the guy is called Magnolia Fan.
Right.
And somehow he's positioned himself at the polar opposite of Paul Thomas Anderson. It's like, well, no, we both love both of them, or did at that point. Like, I love Kevin Smith. I can laugh at a good dick joke.
Right.
And I love Paul Thomas Anderson because it's like, Boogie Nights is a masterpiece, you know?
Right.
But he has to somehow position himself like, well, those are, I'm a lower class kid from Jersey, and that's like Hollywood bullshit. And it's like, well, you're underestimating. You don't get it.
And unfortunately, his whole shtick is always to like preemptively strike against himself and like make fun of himself first and then and apologize for his stuff. And I mean, I have a lot of
that. Typical fat boy thing to do. Though,
you know? Well, I mean, I even do, you know, we'll come on to F this movie and be like, our podcast sucks. But we hope you listen, you know.
It absolutely sucks.
Because I know, you know, to some extent, he is sort of backed in that corner because if you say to a serious movie fan, like, yeah, I like Kevin Smith, it's like, oh no, he's
Howard Stern
awful,
too.
Right?
It's like, I like Howard Stern, like, really?
Because
like,
not only are his movies immature and about poop, but like, he's a terrible filmmaker, and so if you like him, you don't know what good movies are. Well, no, that's not true. I can understand what his movies are and appreciate things about them, and still like, fucking Lucas Moodyson or whatever, you know, like,
yes, Lucas Moody, McWeeny,
David Gordon Green, whoever,
David Alan Greer.
I love his movies. Blank Man. Forget about this.
Yeah, you're right though. It's that, I don't know, like his forte is not the filmmaking itself. It's the whole, everything that surrounds it. The writing.
Right.
It's like, it's the characters, the cleverness. I still love the Jason Lee character in Mallrats is one of my favorite characters ever.
Right, even though the character's not particularly well written, it's just such a great performance. Right. It's like, who is this guy and why is he shouting all of his lines? Right. Like, that is fucking he's great. A
professional skateboarder. I can't wait to see him in Mumford.
I like Mumford.
I haven't seen Mumford since I saw it.
And you know, Kevin Smith, like the podcasting and the books and the online writing and all that, that always used to be like in addition to.
Right, his Clerks cartoon was
right. It was all stuff. Funny. Right,
was that an, like ABC? Wasn't it like a major?
It ran for like 2 weeks.
It's still like you know,
it's really funny if you go back and watch it. It was I think it predates Family Guy in a lot of ways, actually. And I'm not the world's biggest Family Guy fan, but
or at all. I actually don't mind Family Guy. You hate Family Guy.
Well, it frustrates me what that show represents.
Man, you have 2.5 men.
I do. Funny. I love 1.5 men. The other one, I'm not so crazy about. He used to do all this shit in addition to making movies. And again, as a fan of him, even more so than his movies, I like that. Cause it was like, he's very accessible.
Right.
I can read books by him and listen to his thoughts on stuff on his podcast. And once upon a time, I went to like a comic convention in Chicago where he did a Q&A and it was just free. It was just part of being at the Comic-Con. You didn't have to pay $80 to go see him talk right. at the Chicago Theater. Now it seems like his plan is to just do all of that fringe shit, you know? Right. Like, he has a whole podcasting network. It's like 24 hours a day, all these different shows and different programming. And that's great. Maybe he's sort of at the forefront of podcasting. I don't know. It's just weird to see him make that transition.
Let me backtrack here a little bit.
We are at the forefront
of podcasting. No, we're not. We will be. Kevin, hey, I don't know if you have listened this far in the podcast about you. We've said some pretty mean things. Some things, let's be honest, we didn't mean entirely. We said some things. Some things were said.
Well, we've been fans and defenders.
So
for
put
years.
Us on your podcast
You're
network.
Breaking our hearts.
If this movie is a fringe thing, just like you are, you crazy
right.
person.
Let's team up and be outside the mainstream together. How much have we talked about Clerks? Because there are things we were supposed to say about Clerks, like about
what?
How the fashion, even though it was shot.
Along.
Even though it was shot in 1993, the clothes make it look like 1987 New Jersey.
And that's maybe something, and again, Chicago is not at the cutting edge of fashion, but
right.
I think that New Jersey is like, that is definitely like, he right. changes outfits from like a military tucked in, like his pants are tucked in his boots to like a Cosby sweater. It's very bizarre.
And I like, even the performances I don't like I'm not the world's biggest Marilyn Gigliotti fan because she's tiny and she just...
Her voice is like,
yeah, but like, I think she absolutely works in the part.
Yes.
And Jeff Anderson, obviously, is very amateurish, but I think he...
His
delivery is perfect.
One of the best things
part.
About that movie, yeah.
Yeah, he's
this
really funny.
Right, absolutely.
And you wanted to talk about Lisa Spoonhour's Caitlin Bree voice.
That voice.
Where everything's like fish, Dante.
It is unbelievable.
Dante.
And I think it's so funny, and I don't want to talk about a person's looks. Yeah, I know. This is getting a podcast. She is like... I think it's so funny. It's built up and built up. Almost like a 16... No, not... Is it 16 Candles or no, Pretty in Pink, where the whole movie is like this dress
that this is the comparison you're drawing?
Yes, thank
That's
you.
So funny.
Stay with me.
I like that this has stuck with you about 16 Candles. That dress was not
no,
fucking worth
16,
it.
It's Pretty
I'm sorry, Pretty in Pink, yeah.
No, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. Like,
no, you're
it was,
right.
It's
you're
Pretty in
right.
Pink that like she is the, you know, a ducky and like the down and out girl that like has to make the dress to the prom or to the home, whatever the dance is.
The prom. It was the prom.
The prom. So it's Molly Ringwald at the prom, and she makes a dress, and the dress is going to, like, gain her acceptance or whatever. It's going to solve everything, because she can't buy a dress because she's from the other side of the tracks.
Right. Literally, there are train tracks in
that movie. I'm not a big Pretty in Pink fan, by the way. But we get to the end, and it's like, this is the fucking dress? Like, what? And again, I didn't see that movie when it first came out. I wasn't necessarily in touch with or in tune with, like, the 80s teenager, because I was not a teen. I was a tween. And I saw it probably when I was in my 20s, and I'm just like, what the heck is this, you know? And I will say, they talked to Caitlin Bree so much that when you actually see her, it's like, whose mom, like, just walked on screen with, like, this perm.
Who's perm and tie and suspenders.
Wide
cabbage
face.
Cabbage patch face.
It is
Here's the thing, though, for years, and maybe it was a function of, like, watching it, like, low resolution on a smaller TV, but, like, I always thought Caitlin Bree was kind of cute and definitely the cuter of the two.
No.
And then watching it this most recent time, I was like, I have to reassess my feelings
Veronica,
about Ms. Spoonhour, who went on to marry Jeff Anderson, and they subsequently got divorced. But, like, she's named Caitlin Bree. She's named after a character on Degrassi, Caitlin. And that was one of those things that I liked about Kevin Smith. Right. Just, like, I watched that show, too, and he's naming his characters after them. I like that.
Wheels is dating Caitlin?
I'm sorry, I borrowed your mom's wallet.
But, yeah, she comes out and she talks like, Dante Hicks, are you jealous?
Check out my suspenders, Dante.
And then she comes out. Okay, let's talk about this movie for a second. So Clerks, right?
It's now, about, after an hour? Let's talk about Clerks.
By the way, I love that in all the, like, the trailers and the I was reading some, like, the print advertisements and, like, the Sundance set. It's like, if you love blah, 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 and salsa sharks. And I'm like, the salsa shark scene is such an insert
but
weird.
But that's how they started the trailer.
Right.
That was, such like, the big moment because he does salsa shark. But again, this is 1994, and it's like a Jaws reference in a movie. A movie referencing another movie, like, very overtly was sort of unheard of because it's just around the same Quentin Tarantino time. Now it's everything.
It's references God, you everything. Can't escape it. It's every, like, you have to include a bunch of different cultural references.
Right.
And even, I probably... speaking to your point about it being like this movie of the time of the moment, even all the dick and fart jokes, like the talking so like I quote honestly or openly about like their experiences and things like that, and 37 dick sucked and all these things. It's like I don't know if we'd seen something like that explicit and also like trying like honest and trying to be sweet about something horrible or something, you know, really crass. So I don't know, but that movie, there's a dead guy in a bathroom. Who's, like, the Jewish character. I mean, he's got to be, you know, it's like...
And again, it's one of those things that they talk about on the commentary track, that guy was very insistent, I think, on playing the role that way.
It's like Jackie Mason. It's like, you mind if I get some...
Hey, Wojcik, And I, you know, 24-year-old Kevin Smith or whatever, probably just, I don't know how comfortable he felt being like, don't do it that way.
Because,
you know, technically you're doing me a favor by acting in my movie,
You mind if I act my scene in Caddyshack 2?
But that's a great example of, like, we've talked before about directors learning all the wrong lessons from their movies. Mm-hmm. And, like, I love Clerks. My least favorite thing about it is the fact that she fucks a dead guy in the bathroom because it's, like, Kevin Smith trying to be outrageous. And it's like, oh, that's the thing you took away because that became, like, the staple of all your movies. Right. It's, like, those dumb kinds of set pieces where it's like, oh,
geez. Well, and obviously the whole movie, like... The movie's about, like, two guys who work in a, like, convenience store or video store, and it's, like, their day. But you've got to, like, make it about so much more. But it could be just about, like, the hockey game is almost enough. Like, just...
Right.
And then it has to be a funeral for some person who died, and, like...
Right.
And they knock over the thing. But it's just such a weird throwaway, like, that scene's over, you know? And, like, that's the end of that.
But
and
then it comes up in the opening scene of Mallrats.
That's right. Yeah, he does that. He tried to create this whole kind of, like...
Askewniverse. You
know, a family tree.
But again, I think that's part of what cultivated his...
It's the charm.
His fandom, is that you have a group of people who, like, become interested in the way these movies connect, and they feel like they're a part of something because they know all the different references to other movies and all that shit.
But man, there's the, when she, like, has sex with the dead guy, it's so, like... And I don't even mind outrageousness. I don't. I don't mind an outrageous set piece.
Because it has to be done... It's very hard to do right.
Right. And if you're going to make a movie, like, obviously you want to have a climax, and no pun intended.
Preferably on the penis of a dead Jewish guy.
But the thing about that, which I just, it's so, like, implausible and dumb, and, like, she's like, I just love how you laid there for me, and just, like...
All cold.
Right, and just, like, I love
100 pounds heavier.
It's just, it's so...
Smelling of poo.
It's so bizarre to me. It's just, so, like... surreal and just, you know, I don't
and
know.
And it just takes too far of a leap in a movie that doesn't really take any leaps like that. It's all pretty much plausible.
I almost like how, like, she comes back and she wants to be back with him, and you need to have this resolve in a certain way, but, like, have them resolve like human beings or immature 20-something 1994 human beings, but don't have it be like, oh my god, like a meteor came and had, you know, like blew up this train that's unstoppable, has to, like, fuck a dead guy. It's just, it's so, like, what are we watching, you know? Like,
yeah, again, it's unfortunate, because so much of the movie is just about the friendship between these two guys, or, like, he's torn between two girls, and it's, like, it's all very relatable stuff, again, especially if you're young in 1994, or young in 2011, you know, whatever, but then it gets to that point, and it's like, well, I just can't relate to that anymore.
No, it definitely becomes like, well, I guess that's the end of her. Like, we won't see her anymore. And it's like, you can go back to repairing things with Veronica.
Right.
And
But it's so weird how dated the movie is, not just because of the way it looks or the clothes or whatever. It's very much of its time, and we can watch it and still really appreciate it, partially because it reminds us of 1994.
Right.
But, like, my son, who's two now, I have to bring him up. I'm sorry. I have to. I just have to. He, you know, when he's six, I'll show him Clerks. And he will have no, like, you know, if he's 13 or 14 and says, Dada, I want to watch Clerks. I'm like, son, you're 14. Stop with the Dada. He will have no idea what
please
a video.
Call me Mr. Dada.
He will have no idea what a video store is. Like,
right.
It doesn't exist. In convenience stores, I assume, still will.
Yeah.
Gas stations have to be attached to something.
No, convenience stores are definitely, especially in certain parts, like in
right.
cities, it's like you go there to get your milk, you
right.
know?
They're called
like
bodegas.
Like the milkmaids, the guy that inspects the eggs in Clerks.
The milk thing is real, the egg thing is not. I say as someone who worked in a convenience
store. Yeah, I know, yeah. But those types of things also are kind of like, I don't mind those little set pieces in the movie,
right.
because it's like,
right.
it just, when it takes these leaps and it's like... I don't know. It's just...
And again, it positions Kevin Smith as a guy with something to say, and that's a hard thing to do as a first-time filmmaker, and that was one of the exciting things about sort of the mid-90s, was that we were meeting all these new people with different things to say.
Right.
And, you know, his was not so much about, like, I don't like convenience store customers, but it was very much a guy who just fucking hated everything and, like, was complaining about everything.
Right.
And that's very true of that whole generation
it,
that we're kind
new.
Of a part of, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
It was a new thing to have seen then. It's like, well,
it was
know.
It was like the invention of Snark, which I think was the original title for Clerks.
The
yeah?
invention of Snark?
The
like
invention of Snark.
So there's something about it, though, that still is charming and sweet, and there's a lot of funny set pieces. And I realize also how much I still quote it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just dumb little scenes and dumb
right.
little lines. And I also like at the end where Caitlin Bree fucks that dead guy, fucks Jackie Mason, and then she goes away in the ambulance.
I like your dead penis.
I have to assume that ambulance was the most expensive set piece, too. They had to get the
perhaps.
Leonardo Fire Department
yeah,
to, like...
Right.
turn the lights on and drive
right,
away.
Right.
So then, like, Randall tells Veronica, and I kind of like this, like, why couldn't it end almost just with, like, forget the whole dead guy thing, and that Dante has a realization, somehow, that he shouldn't be with this horrible person who cheated on him 8.5 times.
Right.
But Randall tells Veronica that Dante wants to break up,
right.
and that she, like, freaks out at Dante and says, you know, you're going to realize one day. He's like, but no, I love you. And she says, you only say that now because you, you know, you've realized,
right.
you know, what you've lost or something.
Right.
It's such a great little piece. And it's actually, that's more, way more grown up and way more believable than anything that, you know, leads up to that. You know, it's just,
right.
it's like, that's a real piece of something right there.
And those are always the things that I hook onto in Kevin Smith movies. And I think Clerks 2 has a lot of that, especially towards the end, about building something for yourself. That's your own.
Yeah, you're reaching too far with
Clerks. I swear I'm not. But you have to get past so many, like, fucking dead guys
right.
to
well,
get there.
To
you
your
know?
Point, it's like he takes the wrong lessons where it's the set, not even so much that there has to be a set piece, but he's like, well, my first movie, it's kind of like, I think we talked before about Hostel.
Yes.
Eli Roth.
Yes.
And I actually think Hostel is a good movie.
Right.
I think it's got some great moments, and it's well done, and it's different and creepy, and it works. It really works. And he makes Hostel 2. And he takes all the wrong lessons. It's
right.
like, well, I'm going to make it. If you thought the other one was gross,
right.
or if you
right.
were squeamish or
right.
skeeved out by, I'm going to make this, I'm going to slit, you know, Wiener Dog's throat and blood's going to fall over. It's just like, no.
Mick Wiener Dog's
what,
throat.
What I liked about it was not that. That's the stuff I looked away.
Yeah, right.
I like the characters and I like what you brought
right.
to the table and I like how they're having a conversation that's real
right.
and it's like a context that I could kind of believe,
right.
but still like, you know, you take the leap. And Kevin Smith... maybe, again, has taken the wrong, like, he's going to make this cartoonish thing and everything has to be a big set piece, like a dating show at the end of Mallrats.
Right,
it's just
right.
like, what? Like, in the mall, of course, this happens all the time in, you know, Leonardo, New Jersey, or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's...
hosted by a guy in, like, a powder blue tux from 1975. Like, it's
right.
not just enough that he's, like, a cheesy game show host. We got to fucking draw a line under it, you know? He's a cheesy game show host, get it? I don't know.
And even Chase and Amy, like, how it kind of ends with her... Or Jason Lee... No, Ben Affleck proposes that they all have sex
yeah,
or something.
Right.
Just like, well,
right.
this could be a grown-up, like, a real conversation.
Right.
without it having to be like a moment where she's like, fuck you.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, I have less of a problem with that, even though it's terrible and I can't watch that scene because it makes me so uncomfortable. Right. But, like, I get that what he's going for is this is utterly misguided, you know?
Yeah.
And so in that way it works. But what other endings to Kevin Smith movies can we spoil? Because we've just
blown
several of them. Jersey Girl, I mean, when they perform Sweeney Todd on stage.
Jersey Girl at all, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Jersey Girl.
Pop out where he finds the baseball card.
That's right. That's not even a joke.
That's, God, that movie. And again, I can't even blame Kevin Smith because he didn't write that piece of garbage, but
right.
It's like, what, you lost a baseball card?
That's what this movie's about? Finding a baseball card? Awesome.
Awesome. And putting Tracy Morgan in stupid costumes. And Zach and Miri, make the porno!
yeah,
donkey show and corks too.
That's the thing, there's a whole bachelor party sequence where a guy fucks a donkey, and it's like that. You're just like, this movie has gone off the tracks in such a big way. Right. But I still do like the things that I like about that movie. I still do really.
I gotta watch it again, honestly.
Yeah, you probably still will hate it a lot.
Tune in for next week's podcast
because, like you said, so many of the faults of Clerks are accentuated. Because when you lose that sort of lo-fi aesthetic and you put Brian O'Halloran in color 10 years older and he just looks sick, you know?
Right.
It doesn't work when it's like, oh, these are amateur actors acting in a real movie.
Right.
And it doesn't work
doing anymore. A favor for their friends almost,
right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yay, Clerks.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it last night and it goes by pretty fast and it's like, yeah. Because it is such a quick little, a lot of talking.
I like it.
I can't wait to
see it. And it will always remind me of, like, watching the Laserdisc over and over again in my bedroom in 1994.
Yeah.
And reading Spike Mike's Slackers and Dykes. And just, like, it was this part of a gateway into this whole world that...
That has somehow just collapsed around us.
Right.
That world is gone.
Right.
That world is fucking gone. It's like, what happened to these voices? And there's even, like...
But the good news? I don't wear pull-ups anymore.
Yes.